You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
In a world filled with cigars, craft beer, comics, movies, and video games,
only two men are brave enough to search out all things nerdy.
It's the Cigar Nerds Podcast!
And welcome to the Cigar Nerds Podcast. I'm Smokin' Joe.
And I'm Brad Jackson.
Guess what? This is going to be our St. Patrick's Day Irish episode.
So break out your kilts and find you a lass with childbearing hips, and we'll leave it at that.
Break out your leprechauns and pour out some Jameson. So
just make sure you don't steal the leprechaun's gold. It's going to end badly.
We'll talk about that later. So
hey, don't tell me how to live my life.
What are we smoking this week?
We are smoking the Gurkha. This is one of the Cellar Reserve cigars.
Cellar Reserve Limitada, aged 15 years.
Yep. So, you know, this is, you know, a Brazilian Arapacara wrapper. Joe, you want to give the official pronunciation?
Arapacara? I mean, that's about as close.
With a Dominican Oler binder and, you know, basically a 15-year-old Dominican filler. So... as far as, you know, the flavor profile, this is, you know, definitely a full-bodied Black as My Heart Maduro.
The label says blend strength 98%.
So, I mean, just in the first third of the cigar, I'm definitely picking out some of the peppery notes and spices. Not much of a woody taste with this cigar. I would say more of a combination between black and white pepper is what I'm picking up on mainly.
And another reason you should get this is because this particular size that we're smoking is called the Kraken. So when you fire it up, you can say, I'm about to unleash the Kraken.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Chase it with some Kraken rum or something.
So it's released in three different sizes. There's a 5x58, you know, Perfecto, a 6x58. And then you've got the Kraken, which is a 6x60.
Yeah, it's definitely a big boy. Also, this week we just returned from AnacroCon. So how did you like your first steampunk convention there, Brad?
Well, it was pretty good. I didn't drink near as much as I thought I was, so I was a little bit disappointed in myself because we ended up bringing booze back home, which was not planned.
Since we drank too much Friday night and was hungover the rest of the weekend.
Oops. Yeah, definitely had a two-day hangover, so I think we did something right. Open bars are dangerous. you know, it was awesome. I mean, we actually got the hotel to, you know, come out there and light the gas fire pit for us. So when we were out by the pool.
We tried to get a bunch of people, you know, announced on our Facebook and stuff that we were going to do kind of a meetup.
Dude,
anybody want to come?
We had like 10, 15 people out there.
It was a pretty good show up. I mean, there's some people that hadn't listened to the show yet. They were just like, hey, cigar meetup, we're coming. So, you know, hopefully we made a few new contacts and friends this weekend. Shout out to any of those guys that are listening. I mean, it was a good time and we hung out with some cool people.
Absolutely. I mean, that's one of the things that, you know, really appealed to me is, you know, just everybody was super friendly. I mean, you know, it was kind of cool. I thought I had a lame-ass costume, and in fact, you know, found myself getting stopped, you know, two or three different times for photo ops and things. So I was like, all right, well, shit, we're on to something.
Oh, yeah, and like I said, Jabba made an appearance, and I met a Jawa, too, and that Jawa costume was, like, wicked. He was, like, a little kid, and he had a voice box in them that would play like clips of Jawa's talking. So he's like jibber jabbering the whole time he's running around. And I was like, that's pretty badass.
Yeah, it was definitely awesome. I mean, that was one of the things that really appealed, you know, such an eclectic group of people. There we go. Using big words that actually know the definition and pronunciation of. So that
and
can
I picked
redeem
up a brothel
myself.
Inspector badge
as well as some brothel tokens.
Yes. All right. Well, we'll be right back with our St. Patrick's Day episode.
Stay tuned.
And we're back. You know, faith in Bagora, laddie. This be our Irish episode.
Wow, that was almost impressive.
I mean, yeah, not since our ninja episode have I had an excuse to make a slightly, insensitive accent impression. And there'll probably be many more of those as the show goes on.
Yep, we're just going to go ahead and there's going to be lots of references to F-bombs, A-bombs,
Irish car bombs.
Irish car bombs. Man, really wish we would have bought
some Guinness and some Jameson.
And, dude, how about a car bomb twist?
Okay.
Jameson, Bailey's Irish Cream, and Guinness.
Yeah, that's how you make an Irish car bomb. There's no twist in that. That's the actual recipe.
Ah, okay. Well, I thought I was onto something. What else can we throw in there that's Irish? And you top it off with our Irish whiskey-aged stout here that we're drinking.
So how are you making it before that, that you thought that was something new?
Hey, I'm looking for car bombs. Yeah, I need about 12 of them. Yep, we're at this table. Go ahead, just put it on my tab. That's usually how it goes.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I mean,
12 car bombs for 3 people, you're usually having a pretty good night.
Oh, yeah. Like I said, so, you know, when you traditionally think of St. Patrick's Day celebrations, what's some of the stuff that, that you know, you may have experienced?
Corned beef and cabbage.
Yeah, I mean, I like corned beef. Like, I like a good Reuben, but I just can't stand the taste of cabbage. I don't even like smelling it cooking. I mean, I'm just disgusted by cabbage.
Yeah, I don't know. It doesn't really faze me all that much. I guess some other traditions, you know, I think of, you know, freaking Savannah and Riverfest. And that comes to mind locally just, you know, because it's here in South Georgia where it's just a weekend of straight-up debauchery.
Yeah, I think Savannah, Chicago, and, like, Boston are probably, like, the 3 biggest St. Patrick's Day celebrations. I've went to Savannah once back with my old buddy Pete, and it's insane. I mean, it's like Mardi Gras.
They shut down the street, and it's just, you know,
They shut down all the streets in, like, you know, the historic area of town, and all the public drinking laws are suspended for the day. So you can walk down the street, you know, drinking a beer as long as it's like not
as long as
like,
you don't have a glass bottle.
Yeah. So I mean, they dye all the fountains and stuff green. There's the huge parade, and like I said, we drank enough Guinness to drown a leprechaun. It was, I don't have the number in front of me, but at one point, I forgot what the actual numbers are of how much Guinness is sold on St. Patrick's Day, but it's like, you know, a third of their profits come from St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah, you know, in fact, with this special bottle of Guinness floating around anywhere from $30 to $50, I've got my name on a waiting list to hopefully get some of that before St. Patty's Day, using its improper tongue.
Yeah. Apparently they get upset when you call it St. Patty's Day. All right. So, you know, as we normally do in here, we talk movies and whatnot. What's some traditional Irish movies to watch to celebrate your St. Patty's Day?
I would say traditional, outside of the fact that it was filmed in Canada, The Quiet Man from 1952.
Well, I did not know that was like filmed in Canada because, you know, watching it, it looks like the Irish countryside. I mean, it's a beautiful
movie. Or maybe
it
was at least a, you know, Canadian production company, but I remembered seeing the you know, closing credits, you know, that had specifically mentioned Canada. And granted, it was 4 o'clock in the morning when the movie wrapped up because it is a good 2 hours and 45 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, that's a John Wayne movie, too. I mean, like, you know, Duke Wayne. Yeah, it's more of one of his, it's not, you know, if you're used to seeing John Wayne as the soldier or the cowboy, this is more of a romantic film, they say, but there's still some good action in this movie.
Yeah, I mean, the action wasn't bad. Watching it, I was like, damn, am I going to get into this? And then there toward, you know, about an hour and a half or so, I was like, all right, this turned out to be a pretty decent movie. Because even though it's a romance, the girl that plays Kate Donner is just a freaking every stereotype you hear about redheads, she fits it to a T. I mean, dude, she is just
she's a fiery lass.
Yeah,
that was played by Maureen O'Hare, who's also been in a lot of John Wayne movies. And yeah, as we all know, I'm obsessed with redheads, so I quite enjoyed this film.
Yeah, so she's the sister of basically a bullying loudmouth landowner, Will Donner, who is Victor McLagan.
Yeah, if you watch any of the old John Wayne westerns, especially the ones where he played a cavalryman, he was always the Irish sergeant that was his kind of sidekick in those movies. I mean, the guy had been in a lot of stuff with John Wayne.
So, you know, not only true to the 1950s film, but also, you know, true to, you know, what they were trying to portray as, I would guess, Irish culture, you know, is, you know, basically, you know, Sean Thornton is trying to get consent from Will to, you know, marry his sister. And, of course, it doesn't bode very well.
What happened is you know, John Wayne's character is a ex-professional boxer who ended up killing somebody in the ring. Yep. And so he swore off fighting ever again. And he was American, but his family was Irish. And he decides to go back to his family's ancestral village and try to buy back the family farm. Well, he ends up getting, you know, kind of in a bidding war with Donner, and, you know, outbids him. And so he automatically hates him. But then, you know, John Wayne falls in love with his sister, and he, like, refuses to give permission to marry, and, you know, refuses to, like, you know, give him her dowry, which is, like, a traditional thing. And, you know, so she wants John Wayne to go kick his ass, because that's, like, the way the Irish, you know, community did. You know, that's how you're going to settle things. But since he had sworn off fighting, he didn't want to do it. And that kind of got him in trouble with his future wife.
You know, from the romance aspect, I mean, it turns into, you know, basically Kate, you know, saying, oh, well, you're shaming me by not wanting to fight my brother, so you're a coward and you're weak, you know. I'm the badass chick over here. I'd fight the motherfucker myself, you know.
Oh, yeah.
But being her brother and the level of respect, of course, that never happens. But, you know, apparently the brother's also holding on to her fortune and a lot of belongings. And you see, you know, a lot of the conflicts between Sean and Kate, just in the fact that, you know, once they do go on to get married, she wants her belongings, her fortune, and, you know, the entire time, you know, Sean's like, I'm a millionaire. What the hell do you need with this stuff? Not realizing the sentimental value of everything.
It's like a cultural thing where it's like that the dowry kind of symbolizes her, you know, freedom or whatever. And so to her, it's important, you know, even though she doesn't really care about the money, it's like the principle of it. And they even eventually trick him into giving permission to marry her, because they're like, oh, this other girl wants to marry you, but she doesn't want to have Kate living in the house. So he gives permission just to get rid of her.
Two girls, one house, not good.
And then he finds out that they tricked him, so he you know, lets them get married, but then he refuses to give the dowry. And like I said, John Wayne gets in all kind of trouble because he won't go kick his ass. And like I said, he was a pretty big Irish dude.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's crazy, you know. Some of the bar shanty, you know, that were sung and everything else were pretty cool that I dug as far as...
Yeah, this was on the list of whatever, like the top 10 essential Irish films. This, I think, came in at number 2. I mean, so it's definitely a world-renowned movie. I mean, it won several Oscars for, I believe, Best Director and like maybe cinematography. It was selected for the National Film Registry, so, you know, the Library of Congress, yeah, they pick some movies that they think are culturally, historically, and aesthetically significant, and this is one of the ones that they decided that it needs to be preserved for future generations.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the production studio that did this film, you know, they were basically known for low-budget B-movies and stuff like that, and, you know, I think this film out here actually was granted a Oscar nomination for Best Picture.
Oh yeah, I mean, so this is considered one of the great movies of all time. And I mean, the first time I watched it is like, yeah, I'd grown up watching, you know, the war movies and the cowboy movies, and I was like, when the hell is he going to shoot somebody? I mean, there's no shootouts in this movie. But yeah,
no, I mean,
but eventually you're like, all right, this is a pretty cool story. And I mean,
it's all, you know, pretty much as close to gentlemen fighting as it gets. I mean, you know, you see Sean show up at the bar and, you know, all the patrons are sitting around and, you know, he orders a black beer and the bartender quickly corrects him and says, oh, you want the porter. So, you know, they're all sitting around drinking and, you know, then badass Donner walks in, you know, to give some lip and everything. And, you know, you just see everybody, you know, the instant, you know, fists start to fly. The entire town is chasing them, you know, through the village and countryside and everything. I mean, dude, it's like a 45-minute fight sequence. Like, I think it's 10 minutes of...
It's a pretty epic fight. I mean, John Wayne finally agrees to, like, all right, I'm going to handle my stuff and get my woman back and have the gentlemanly fight agreement.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's funny because, I mean, there was a good... probably 5 minutes of, you know, Sean dragging Kate, you know, freaking clawing, you know, saying, all right, you want your fortune so bad? Fine, we're going to go get it. And, you know, basically, you know, I mean, he's dragging her by the hair and, you know, everything else. I mean, just...
She eventually tries
absolutely,
like,
you know, manhandling her.
Yeah, because she eventually tries to make, you know, convince him. So she's like, well, I'm leaving you if you don't go get this stuff. And actually goes to get on a train to leave and... He, like, drags her off the train, like, takes her back to the brother, and he's like, here, you can have her. I don't want her, you know, if this is going to be this much trouble. And then that's when I think the fight finally ensues.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, basically, Donner turns over the fortune and says, okay, well, you gave me my sister back, so here's the fortune, enjoy. And, you know, the entire time it was a setup. So you know, see Kate and Sean, you know, throw the fortune into this furnace-like thing.
Yeah, she's like, I didn't even want it. It was the fact that you didn't give it to me that was pissing me off. So, yeah, now that you've given me my money back, I'm going to go home, get dinner started. You know, after you're done kicking his ass, come home and, and we'll have a good time.
You know, it's funny, too, because, I mean, I can remember scraps in middle school and high school that I was in. And, you know, I guess things were slightly different where it used to be, you know, you could have kind of a knockout, you know, fist fight. And typically you ended up shaking hands and walking away as friends instead of, you know, freaking bitter enemies or something.
Yeah, this was the most gentlemanly ass beaten I'd ever. Cause, I mean, it is a long fight scene. They even stopped for beer at one point where they're like, I mean, this fight is going like all the way through the town. And at one point they like stumble into a pub and like, whoa. Pause. You know, they stop, have a couple beers, then go back to fighting.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that, you know, they stop fighting to have the beers, and they're just having a friendly conversation, and I think they get in an argument on who's going to pay for whose beer.
Yeah, he's like, let me buy your beer. He's like, no, let me buy your beer. Your money's no good. Yeah, so they're friends now, and they're like, all right, I'm going to buy you, and neither one of them wants the other one to pay for his beer, so they start fighting again.
Yeah, so you eventually, you know, they make their way back to... you know, Sean's little cottage and everything else. And, you know, they enjoy some dinner. Husband and wife lives happily ever after. And you're left with a feel-good feeling.
And even the old brother finally finds him a wife at the end, too. So everyone lives happily ever after.
Everyone wins. So no pesky leprechauns or, you know, any folklore too much in this film. I mean, it was very... down to earth, very traditional, and I think that was one of the things that really appealed to me about it.
Oh yeah, I mean, it's just, and the look of it too. I mean, just the, you know, the cinematography of it. I mean, it just looks like a beautiful Irish village, what you assume a small town in Ireland actually looks like.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, it'd be awesome to be able to go and, you know, I'd love to hike or horseback, you know, through some of the scenery and stuff there. I mean,
I saw online the other night, if you got like a, I think it's like 140 pounds. There's an Irish island for sale. So if you want to buy a private island in Ireland.
I got about 140 pounds with some plus on it. I mean, I've been looking to go on a diet for a while.
Or that might have been euros. I don't know what that little weird symbol is. It's I know it's not dollars, whatever amount it was. But yeah, there's a I think 100-acre island for sale with a freshwater pond and caves and stuff. So yeah, you can move to Ireland. Yeah. Getting Wi-Fi might be a bitch to be able to do the podcast, but other than that, it looked pretty sweet.
I mean, we'll figure out a way. I mean, we could communicate via satellites.
Morse code. We're doing a shortwave radio podcast.
I mean, hey, the worst things could happen, I suppose. So, yeah, I mean, talking about traditional films and everything, that was probably the one that, like you said, really stood out. of course, there's other films out there that we're going to get into a little bit later in the segment that definitely have some of the overtones, but probably aren't, you know, that traditional.
But speaking of traditional, I got some weird St. Patrick's Day facts for you.
Okay, let's hear it.
Did you know that green is actually not the color of St. Patrick?
Dun, 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 dun. You mean American culture has...
No, I think eventually it was like an Irish thing to switch to, but the original color of St. Patrick was blue. So in the original days, that was, you know, the traditional color of Ireland, and then it kind of changed to green because green was, I guess, a lucky, you know, a lucky color or something. Do you know where the first St. Paddy's Day parade occurred?
Do not.
It's not Ireland. The first St. Patrick's Day parade was in Boston in 1737.
Interesting. Which I think, you know, Boston, and there was another city that was very well known for its Irish heritage and stuff like that, that was also in America.
Chicago is probably like the other really big one, because like I said, they dye the rivers there green. And Seattle even paints the stripes on the roads green for St. Patrick's Day.
Damn, that's epic.
Yeah. And, you know, the whole St. Patrick was famous for supposedly running the snakes out of Ireland, but apparently there was never any snakes in Ireland to begin with. they're like that was a metaphor for the people he converted and ran the heathens out of Ireland, but not actual snakes.
I wonder, Joe, would we be considered heathens?
Probably. Do you know St. Patrick wasn't even Irish?
Ah, I did not.
He was a British-born Roman, and in fact, he was captured by Celtic pirates or whatever and taken back to Ireland and eventually escaped. But at that point, he started hearing voices, which in that day and age, he's like, it must be God talking to me. And supposedly he was told to go back and convert the heathen Celts to Christianity. So that's when he came back to Ireland to preach the word.
I guess at that point is where all the Catholic influence and everything else comes into play.
Yeah, and like I said, as far as it being a party thing, that's mainly something that, you know, I guess the Americans did, because originally the St. Patrick's Day was an actual religious holiday, so it was, you know, more of a... I mean,
that's just kind of like Valentine's Day. I mean, you got the St. Valentine's Massacre and everything else, but somehow we've, you know, turned it into a romanticized holiday.
And that's kind of how the clover got to be symbolized with the shamrock, because he used to use that to try to teach people about the Holy Trinity, you know, the whatever, Jesus, God, and the Holy Ghost, or whatever, the three
Father, Son, Holy Ghost.
Yeah, there you go. So the three leaves of the clover, he used to use that kind of as a visual aid to explain to people that stuff. Do you know where the shortest St. Patrick's Day parade is?
No idea.
Dripsy Cork, city in Ireland. The parade only goes 23 meters. They basically march from one bar to the other bar in town. That's the entirety of their St. Patrick's Day parade.
That sounds like a parade I'd probably want to be a part of, though.
Yeah, and like it's such a big thing now that because St. Patrick's Day falls during the Lent holiday, where you're supposed to like give up stuff for Lent, but the church actually gives people a pass on St. Paddy's Day. So you're allowed to take a break and cheat on whatever you've given up for Lent, or go get drunk as shit on St. Patrick's Day. So I mean,
that's almost right in line with the premise behind Mardi Gras, is to go and get all of your sins out.
Right before Lent and Good Friday begins.
I might just become religious yet. You don't know.
All right. So what's another Irish tradition movie that you must watch at least once a year?
I mean, once again, I don't know about tradition, but I'm just going to go ahead and throw it out there.
It's my tradition.
it's probably one of my favorite movies of all times, and that is The Boondock Saints.
I mean, we have a poster of it here in the Nerd Cave. I mean,
it's going on Facebook.
Oh, yeah.
Probably with guns blazing and everything else, too. I mean, it's just such a freaking phenomenal, badass, crime film and everything else, Troy Duffy definitely, directed a hell of a film with this one. I mean, you got Sean Patrick Flannery, Norman,
Walking Dead's Norman Reedus.
Yep.
And David Della Rocco. Which I think Rocco is probably one of my favorite characters that's not one of the Saints.
Yeah, Rocco is, you know, I mean, he's a very eccentric character. I mean, he's definitely the comic relief, I think, of the group. I mean,
but he always has like a badass speech in like each of the movies where he's like kind of like gives the rallying speech, especially in the second one. I mean, his what it takes to be a man speech is probably one of my favorite monologues in movies.
I mean, you had William Dafoe, you know, playing Paul Smecker.
FBI agent Smecker.
So, I mean, dude, this movie, you know, ultimately grossed 50 million in domestic video sales. And I mean, yeah, kinda, just the cult original following that
bombed, and I think it only released in like 5 theaters. It made like no money, but it made a ton of money in like the video and just became like just legendary.
So, do we want to go through and give folks a little bit of background? It's this one film that amazes me that, you know, half the people that I talk to are in love with the film. The other half have heard somebody mention, but have never watched it before. Kind of like me in Star Wars. People's like, how does that happen? Is that even possible?
Yeah, I mean, you see somebody with, like, Veritas and Aquitas, you know, written on their hands, you know what it means. I don't know how many tattoos have come out of that movie.
Shitload. you know, I follow the Boondock Saints on Facebook and Twitter and everything else just because I'm looking for updates for the upcoming third film. And it is crazy, you know, when they ask people to submit their fan art and tattoos and everything else. And, you know, it's not just guys. And, I mean,
there used to be I don't know if the guy still does it or not. Well, I know the gallery's not there anymore, but there used to be a gallery at one of the malls here called Chargill Galleries, and all those paintings were pop culture themed, and the dude painted a lot of Boondock Saints paintings. I mean, he had a bunch of just badass stuff.
Yeah, so I guess let's go ahead and jump into the premise of the film. So basically, you got the two fraternal twins, you know, celebrating at a pub when three badass Russian mobsters bust in and, you know, threaten
Connor and McLeod. I'm thinking of freaking Highlander.
Connor and Murphy.
Yeah, there you go. Connor McLeod of the Clan McLeod. But that's Scottish, not Irish, so it doesn't work.
Yeah, so I mean, basically, the two brothers, you know, just embarrass the hell out of the Russians, and you know, so goes on for the Russians to seek revenge on Connor and Murphy.
yeah. And they end up, you know, killing these two dudes and, yeah, self-defense. I mean, I think they beat one of them to death with a toilet.
Yeah, with the toilet. I mean, the tank lid to the toilet was probably one of the most. I mean, you know, the brothers are tied up and everything else, and you just see, you know, one brother, you know, manages to, you know, freaking rip the toilet up off the plumbing on the ground, which is a hell of a feat in itself. Yeah. And then
jumps like off the roof of the
building.
Yeah,
throws it out at least a 3-story building. Would you say? I mean, that's
drops it from the roof and then jumps on the guy and like lands on him with the toilet. And they end up killing these two mobsters, and you know, they're pretty much good guys. They go turn themselves in, and you know, the police find out that it's just, you know, self defense. But since there's like a huge, like, you know, media coverage of it, they're like, hey, you guys can spend the night here and sneak out later.
I mean, I'm going to stop you right there because that was one of the funniest lines of the movie to me is, you know, freaking Smecker is, you know, over there just kind of giving the guys, you know, offers them cigarettes. And, you know, one of the deputies comes in and, you know, asks, hey, can the guys just spend the night here? We got a couple of extra holding cells. And, you know, he just replies
like the
back and, you know, he's like, I don't know. Let's call your mommy and see if your friends can stay over.
Yeah.
I mean, just his smart ass.
I mean, that to him, when they're talking to him and they start speaking like all the different languages and stuff that they had, you know, because these guys, you know, they look like just dumb, you know, whatever Irish versions of rednecks, but these guys are actually, you know, fairly self-educated and actually, you know, smart dudes and speak several different languages. And, you know, they're definitely not the, you know, soccer hooligans
I mean,
they appear to be.
The whole judging a book by its cover definitely applies with these guys. I mean, if you pass them on the street, You just, all right, average, you know, Joes. No offense to you, Joe. But, you know, once you get them behind closed doors and everything else, I mean, their freaking weaponing skills, their fighting styles and everything else, I mean,
oh, yeah,
I don't know if it's just the fact that they're twins, but the way they act in unison so much of the time, I mean, it's like they're hitting on all cylinders without skipping a beat.
But anyway, back to the kind of like the, you know, when they're spending the night in jail, they get what they interpret as a vision from God that's like, y'all should clean up Boston. So they decide to become vigilantes and start taking out all these mafia dudes. And at the start of it, they're not very good at it. I mean, they're arguing and fighting with each other and just kind of stumble in by accident and then just go badass and like kill everybody. But yeah, their stuff doesn't really go as planned.
Yeah, they definitely don't have the cool, calm, and collected aspect down yet. I mean, it kind of reminds me of when, you know, freaking Rocco's over there and he's like, man, what do I got to do to become a saint? You know?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, when they take out their first like mafia group and Rocco comes in because he's like kind of like the mafia like idiot guy, and they kind of send him in there just to get killed. And so they start pranking him and shit, making they're fixing to kill him and scare the shit out of him. And it's hilarious. And I think the funniest thing in that movie is when like they finally let him in on the secret and they're all kind of like partying at the house and he ends up accidentally shooting the cat.
Well, it's crazy. I mean, dude, that scene happens out of nowhere.
Yes.
I mean, because, I mean, they're just drunk, they're having fun, and, you know, Rocco just freaking throws his hands up and slams his hands down on the table, which causes a gun to go off, and next thing you know, you got exploding kitten on the wall.
Oh, yeah, I mean, it just freaking explodes. And, like, the mafia eventually, like, gets, you know, tired of them killing everybody and tries to free one of their old assassins out of prison, Il Duce. Which means the Duke in English.
And dude, I want one of those fucking vests.
Yeah, I mean Billy Connolly, he's hilarious in his like stand-up routines. I mean, the guy is a complete, you know, badass. But yeah, him as, and he don't really say a whole lot in this first
movie.
No,
I mean, there's no need to. I mean, dude, you know, they walk out, you know, of the house after, you know, all that shit goes down and everything else, and you just see this badass motherfucker standing there with a big trench coat.
And he's smoking a cigar, too.
Yeah, smoking a cigar, so, I mean, automatically going to give the dude some props right there.
Yeah.
And
he opens it up, and he's like, the vest has six holsters mounted on the vest. So he doesn't even bother reloading. He just draws two guns. When they run out, he drops them, draws two more, and just, like, really jacks them up.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the twins get jacked up. I think Rocco got
Rocco
bad end of the deal with the missing finger.
Yeah, they shot one of his fingers off.
Which is crazy. Out of all the sheer amount of bullets that flew to that film, that I don't know. That's another thing that makes, you know, you're not just dealing with, you know, simple-minded folks, is, you know, they actually go through, and any blood spray that's, you know, there on the house, they go ahead and hit it with ammonia to
try to kill
the
DNA
feds
or whatever.
Off their trail and everything. And
that's one thing I like, kind of like how they did it, is like you would see them preparing for the gunfight, and then it would jump ahead to the aftermath, and then it would bring in Smecker's character, who was like the expert,
and
he would explain what had happened based on the evidence. But then it would actually show the gunfight, and as he's kind of narrating it and explain it, and that particular gunfight too, that's where he's like, there was a gunfight.
Yes.
And just gets like all,
I mean,
operatic
that was one
about
of the, you know, the classic scenes. I mean,
William Dafoe is brilliant in this movie. I mean, he's so that's probably one of my favorite roles of his, is as Agent Schmecker.
So, I mean, you know, the brothers have some great lines, you know, amongst themselves, that come out from time to time. I don't have enough time to go through and read all of my favorites. But, I mean, the dialogue, the action, and the choreography of the movie, like you said, I think is what, you know, makes this such a great film.
Yeah, and then, like I said, they eventually get captured and are going to be executed, but they break out and start kicking ass. And then El Duce hears them doing their, every time they eliminate somebody, they do a little prayer and double tap the final guy. And it turns out it's like their family prayer. So when he hears him saying it, he's like, he finishes the line. They're like, who the fuck is this guy? And it turns out that he's their father.
Yeah.
So they kind of, that's how they kind of inherited their,
you know,
inherited their badass skills it was, I guess, genetic.
And I mean, I think another one of my favorite scenes, talking about, you know, Rocco is when they go in the strip club and, you know, you see the topless stripper down on the ground passed out and he just goes and cops a fill or something.
Yeah.
And he's like, I've got to kill this guy to repent for that, man. I got to make up for that shit. Like,
yeah, Rocco is so weird in that first movie. but yeah, you know, eventually, you know, Smecker and the cops figure out who the boys are, but they're like, you know, they have to decide, you know, do we arrest these guys or do we help them, because they're, you know, cleaning up the garbage of the town. And you know, they eventually like kind of join forces and, you know, let them do what they do.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think, you know, like watching the Arrow series and stuff like that, I mean, you've seen crime rates go down and everything else. So yeah. I mean, you know, as a law enforcement officer, do you say, well, shit, you know, they're making an impact where we weren't, or do we say we're going to be out of fucking jobs?
Like. Yeah. I mean, in comics, you always have to, like, you know, eventually support the vigilante. I mean, Commissioner Gordon and Batman and Captain Lance and the Arrow. I mean, you eventually got to let them do what they're, you know, figure out they're doing good for the city.
So, yeah, I mean, I think that about wraps it up on the first film. You want to jump into the second one?
Yeah, that one actually came out 10 years later. I mean, for a film that, like I said, you know, normally you don't see a sequel on a movie that makes, like, you know, almost no money in, you know, the box office, but it had such a cult following that they finally made a sequel. And, you know, Boondock Saints 2, All Saints Day. I mean, I saw that thing opening night, and it was, I mean, it's, I liked it pretty much as much as the first one. I mean, they brought in, who was their sidekick and the Mexican guy that they run into, and he's like, you know, I want to join the club.
That was shit. Who was it? Damn it! If you didn't put me on the spot, I would have had it.
You're the one that actually, you know, had time to watch that stuff today.
Yeah, well, I mean,
quick to the Googles.
Yeah,
but yeah, apparently some mafia guy wants to take out the Saints, so. He hires
Romeo.
Yeah.
That's fuck, the most generic name in the world, and we couldn't come up with it.
Who's the actor that plays him?
That is Clifton Collins Jr.
Yeah, I mean, he's been in a bunch of stuff too. But yeah, this mafia boss, you know, hires this assassin to basically fake a killing. They kill this priest to make it look like the Saints did it. So the Saints have, like, since retired. They've, like, got a sheep farm back in Ireland, and they, you know, they've grown beards and such, and so yeah, it gets back to them that somebody's, like, you know, trying to make them look bad. So they have to dig up their gear and, you know, shave and get ready to come back to America and go back to kicking ass.
Yeah, so, you know, I mean, that's where they bring in, you get greeted by Agent, actress Julie Benz.
Yeah, she's pretty much
UNC,
like,
Bloom, is that?
Yes.
Did I pronounce that right?
Yeah, I believe that's her name. Yeah, she's like Smecker's protege or whatever.
Yeah. But, you know, just that scene of her getting out of the cars, and it does, you know, from starting from the high heels up to the legs and everything else.
Yeah, I've
definite, you know, Boondock Saint sex appeal there.
Yeah, I've been a fan of her since she was on, you know, Buffy and Angel. I mean, but yeah, that one of the things I love in that movie too is when they're planning the heists, you know, and it shows like what in their head is going to happen, and they're looking like total badasses, and and they're like, imagine, like, this is how it's going to go down.
I mean, they are all tacked out, decked out, the whole 9 yards.
Romeo's like, you know, riding on the forklift with like a big gun and stuff, and then it happens nothing the way they planned it.
I'm debating, was he fucked up during the filming of that, or you know, does he just not know how to drive a forklift? Because, dude, I mean, he's all over the place. And, like, I think the way that, you know, they make their grand entrance is he realizes there's a big, you know, landing dock or something they're about to drive off. So he slams the brakes and freaking dumps the load. And
hey, I mean, I'm certified to drive a forklift, and it's not that easy. I mean, they steer backward from, because the rear wheels does the steering instead of the front wheels, so it's like backward from a car. You like turn right and you go left. I mean, it takes like a minute to figure that stuff out. So yeah, if you've never, plus the stress of being in a gunfight. And he's like, telling the police, all right, I'm gonna go up and like pistol whip the guy and steal the forklift and stuff, and they give him like this little tiny like girl's gun instead of like the big cannon that he was like imagining. So when he goes to piss whip the guy, just kind of like, it's like, ow, like, what the hell are you doing?
Yeah. It almost reminded me of the freaking cricket from Men in Black.
Yeah, like, pretty much.
I'm gonna break this thing just squeezing the trigger, right?
Yeah, I mean, they give him so much shit through the movie, like, you know, they eventually like, all right, you're part of the crew. But yeah, they definitely like haze him throughout the movie.
Yeah, I mean, I like the appearance of the old bartender Doc, played by Gerald Parks. You know, his character, you know, was pivotal and, you know, basically saying, hey, you know, that guy was an independent contractor for the himself. basically tells them where their hideout is and everything else. And at that point, the Saints have officially returned.
Oh, yeah, the bartender. I love that character, too, because he's got Tourette's, too, and just... they make fun of him so bad because he just keeps saying like fuck ass all the time, which
I don't think you did that one justice. Fuck ass.
Every time he tries to like use a metaphor, he like screws it up, like common slang terms, he gets them like all backward and stuff. It's just weird.
But I mean, you know, it's those dynamics and everything else that really brought that movie and made it a whole. So, I mean,
and of course, like, you know, Julie Benz gets her describing the gunfight scene like Smecker had in the first movie, and it where like they're swinging through the window and shooting up the place.
Yeah, doesn't she? I mean, eventually she basically, you know, goes the, you know, Smecker route and, you know, is like, hey, I'm actually on your guy's side.
Yeah, I mean, because like
she ends up getting replaced by some other agent or something, right? Some other protagonist comes into play.
Well, no, like I said, like through the whole movie, you don't realize that she's on their side until she finally like shows up at the bar and be like, yeah, Smecker clued me in, dude. I'm here to help y'all out. And then the three original cops, the detectives that kind of joined them in the first movie, you know, they're back. So they, eventually, like I said, somebody takes her off the case and some other guys come in, but she's like, well, before I leave, let me at least describe how the gunfight occurred. And you know, it was just cool ass sequence and stuff where the one guy tries to come up with a catchphrase and it's like really bad. And he like stops the whole flashback and he's like, really? Is that the catchphrase you want to go with? You want to try that again? It makes him come up with something cooler to say.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, as far as my personal opinion goes, I mean, the second film was great. It didn't quite resonate with me the same way the first film does. But that's just my take. I mean, you said it earlier. You would kind of, you know, you would put it on par with the first film.
It's definitely different. I mean, I think there's a lot more comedy in the second one. But, the action's still on point. And the eventual kind of vision they have of Rocco, who, spoilers if you haven't seen it yet, Rocco died in the first movie. But at one point, they get kind of down on themselves, and they see Rocco, and he kind of comes and gives him this. It's funny too, because they were talking to Rocco, the dead cat like walks across the bar. So it's like the cat that got killed in the first one's back too. So it's like everybody's ghost makes an appearance, and Rocco gives this this amazing speech about, you know, what it is to be a man. That is just, I mean, it, if you don't get a little like, you know, want to jump out of your seat and cheer when you hear that, speech.
No, that was definitely,
you have no manhood.
You know, I was watching it earlier today as I was, doing, you know, some other work and stuff like that. And
I posted a clip of it on our Facebook page, so go check that out if you've not seen that speech.
Yeah, I mean, you know, just, and the speech started and I just had to stop what I was doing and just...
Fucking Wayne!
So...
men do not talk about their feelings because it's none of your fucking business. Oh man, I just love that whole sequence.
Bob Marley as one of the detectives, I thought was interesting.
Yeah, but that wasn't actual.
Not the Rastafarian.
Yeah, when I was looking at the Wikipedia, I'm like Bob Marley. I'm like, did I miss something in that movie? But no, he was not one of the musician Bob Marley.
But yeah, I mean this film. I mean, you know, box office made $8 million. The budget was $8 million. Box office, they grossed $10 million. So I mean, you know, they were in the black. So that's a plus. You know, like I said, following on YouTube and everything else for the third Boondocks. I mean, I think I've seen.
I've heard Troy say that it's in production, and I've seen other guys say that it's not going on right now. But I mean, yeah, Reedus has got a lot of downtime with The Walking Dead since they only kind of play for like half the year. I mean, and his star is like huge right now. So I mean, if he took the time to make a Boondock Saints 3, I mean, it would definitely make some money. Because I mean, when this movie came out, he was kind of a nobody, but like now he's like freaking huge star.
Yeah. You know, another aspect of both of the films was the soundtracks. Dude, I'm a huge fan of
Dropkick Murphys and
yeah.
Yeah, a lot of cool Irish music in these movies. I saw a picture the other day. They were at some kind of Comic-Con convention or whatnot, and Sean Patrick Flannery happened to be there. So they took a photo of him and Reedus doing the Boondock Saints pose with Rick. So they had their guns to the back of Rick's head doing the Boondock Saints thing.
That's pretty awesome. I mean, there was enough, following and everything else that, you know, there was a six-issue comic book series that was written by Troy and published by 12 Gauge Comics that was released in May of 2010 as part of a companion to the movie, which, you know, offered a more in-depth version of, Ducey's backstory as well.
Yeah, and you finally learn a lot of that in the second movie. There's a lot of flashbacks to him as a young man and how he became like the badass assassin, because basically he was a leather worker or a furniture maker, and the mafia came in and killed his boss. So the boss's son, who was crippled, you know, he basically makes the vest for El Duce and like sends him out to kill all these mafia guys that, you know, eventually finds out, you know, he was really using him to like take out the competition so he could take over the mafia.
Yep.
And eventually, like, you know, tells him, hey, you've, you know, got kids now and I'll kill your family if you don't, you know, go to prison. So like once he had taken out all the competition, he kind of betrayed him and sent him to prison for the next, you know, 30 years or whatever until he's, you know, busted out in the first movie.
Yeah, so also, too, there was a mini book available on the official Boondock Saints website, which had told a story that took place prior to the strip club scene that we alluded to earlier. And it said that both will eventually be released in a single graphic novel.
So. I didn't even know about that. I'm going to have to pick that up when I find it. All right, we kind of talked about this last episode with who would win in a fight, Rick or... Ron Perlman. Who would win in a fight, the Boondock Saints versus Rick and Daryl?
Saints versus Rick or Daryl.
That's a hard one, man.
It's a hard one. I mean, I would say it depends on the environment. Post-apocalyptic environment without the cool gadgets and everything else that the Saints had access to, I would probably lean more toward Rick and Daryl just because, you know, they could use the environment and everything else a little bit better to, you know.
The Saints, though, man, they're sneaky.
Well, I mean, yeah.
And they dual wield, man. So instead of like two guns, it's four guns. Those guys can like, you know, do some, you know, serious gun ballet action going on.
So I don't know. I mean, I would almost say, you know, Norman versus Norman. Boondock Saints from The Walking Dead. Who's... I mean, the
ultimate... crossbow has a little bit more, some good range on it. So if it's a a distance battle, I think Rick and Daryl would take it because they have if they got some long guns. But if it gets to a CQB where they're having a shootout in an abandoned bar somewhere, I'd have to go to the Saints. I think they're definitely close quarters combat badasses.
Well, I mean, that's what they, they utilize the element of surprise and everything else. And, hey, we're just going to bust in the door and go in guns blazing, no questions asked. And
there's no plans.
Yeah.
Just bring your rope. You always going to have rope.
And that's, dude, that was another thing. I mean, he was given so much shit for bringing the rope. And,
and they finally use it.
Yes.
He said, my plans always were. Well, another thing, when you think about St. Patrick's Day and Irish stuff, you always think of The Leprechaun. So our final movie series you're going to talk about is the Leprechaun horror movies.
Yeah, I got around to watching Leprechaun 1 earlier today as well. As you can tell, I'm a bit of a procrastinator. I do everything last minute, and hopefully my brain retains it. Normally it doesn't work out.
No, not at all.
but this is basically a 1993 cult American horror comedy, written and directed by Mark Jones. Warwick Davis is in the title role and Jennifer Aniston as well, and this is actually her film debut.
And I think, Luda or Lubda or something like that is the leprechaun's name. But yeah, you may know Warwick as Wicket the Ewok and Arno. Yeah, and then I know he's also in Willow.
Willow.
And then he was one of the Ewoks as well. So yeah, dude's been around, and he was in every movie up until they've just did a reboot of it last year, I think it was. I have not seen the reboot, but yeah, he was the original like seven films of of Leprechaun. And I mean, these things made no sense. If you watch them all, they're very little connected. Like each one has a kind of a different story. So there's like, they really don't, you can pretty much pick up any of them and not miss out because there's really no reference to the previous stories.
The real premise here is just don't steal the leprechaun's pot of gold. The dude's 600 years old.
Where's me gold?
Yeah. Oh, you swallowed that piece? Well, let's just disembowel you.
Oh, yeah. The first one, a guy had stolen the gold in Ireland, brought it back to America, and the leprechaun followed them. Well, he attacks him, and the guy ends up locking him in a box because leprechauns, their weakness is a clover. So he seals him in this box with a clover, but he's end up...
Fresh picked clover. Yeah. Not just any clover.
So yeah, he... dies while he's locking up the leprechaun, and someone eventually 10 years later buys the house, and these kids are dicking around.
The wife dies because she falls down the steps.
Yeah, but he's
basically gets thrown into a loony bin,
yeah,
and forced there to rot. And you find out later on because Jennifer Aniston's character basically rushes over there once she finds out who the original owner of the house was and everything to go and see him, but Leprechaun's already been there, so the dude's freaking hanging out inside an elevator shaft upside down, strangling on his own blood. And
and then the second movie is basically the leprechaun needs a wife now, so he goes and tries to kidnap the woman who's like a descendant of his original
girl
that was going to be his wife or something.
Chucky or Leprechaun? Because I just think it's funny that they kind of did that same thing, right? I mean,
yeah, Bride of Chucky.
Bride of Chucky, The Seed of Chucky, and...
I don't know, because the first Leprechaun movie was 93, so I'm not sure when Chucky came out.
I would say probably Child's Play. Quick! To the Googles!
Yeah, we need like a sound effect to ring when it's like, Google this here.
Oh... 1988,
so yeah, Chucky.
Chucky predated it, so nice to know where the leprechaun got their ideas from. And some of the same tactics, too, man, because especially like in the first Leprechaun movie where you see him bust out of the barn hauling like 60 mile an hour on his little tricycle, like shit was just hilarious.
Oh, yeah. And then the third movie, a whole new storyline again. This time someone has stolen his gold and somehow got turned him into a statue. And this time the gold actually grants wishes when you find it. So somebody steals the gold yet again, and the leprechaun gets freed from the statue and is trying to collect his gold as usual so he can wish, make some kind of wish, and I don't know, destroy the world or some shenanigans.
Yeah, I don't know. A funny story is back when movie rental stores were around, I actually rented the Leprechaun, like two or three of them on VHS. And, you know, I'd go on the weekends and spend, you know, the weekend with my grandma and stuff. And she was absolutely clueless to these. Like, you know, I had her convinced that Beavis and Butthead, you know, Do America was like a child's rated cartoon or something. So it was absolutely hilarious when she sat down to watch that with me. And, you know, I think it got to the scene where they talk about a goddamn, and she was pretty much like, all right, I'm done. But with the Leprechaun movies, like, I remember I'd passed out on the couch or something, and, like, she wakes up. It had to be, like, 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, just this blood-curdling scream. So, like, you know, I run in there, like, what the hell's going on? And, you know, she said, leprechauns, all I could feel was them fuckers crawling up my sheets. Like...
Oh, that's amazing. And so after that third movie, that's when the shit got real weird. Because the next one was Leprechaun in Space. Yeah, I don't even remember how the premise of that movie. I just remember that he was on like a space station running around killing like space marines or something.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, we see that a lot with Jason Voorhees. And
eventually Jason went to space. Yeah, pretty much everyone, that's like... When you know the thing has, like, run into too many sequels, it's, like, in space. I'm surprised we haven't had Freddy in space.
I don't know. We did have him in Freddy vs. Jason in the epic pinball scene.
But yeah, that's true.
I don't think he got to venture outside of you know,
but the
Earth's atmosphere yet.
The one I remember the most, because it's been a while since I've watched the originals, but the fifth one, Leprechaun in the Hood. And the sequel, Leprechaun Back to the Hood.
The
Leprechaun in the Hood actually had Ice-T in it. He played a pimp named Mac Daddy Onassis, which, you know, that's, of course there's going to be a pimp involved. It's Leprechaun in the Hood. But yeah, he steals the Leprechaun's magic mind-controlling flute and his gold and uses it to become, like, basically Puff Daddy. He becomes, like, this badass like music producer or whatever.
Yep.
Until these like, you know, thug kids rappers like decide to rob him and steal the flute and the gold, which frees the leprechaun again, and then he has to come back for his revenge.
Yeah, there was one film. Oh, I'm trying to remember. I don't know. It may be the Leprechaun film, because I want to say the cover had Snoop Dogg, but I remember from the fifth film that, you know, they basically did the character to look like Snoop Dogg. Even
nah,
though
Snoop Dogg
really
had his
him.
Own horror movies. I can't remember.
Yeah,
what the,
oh,
there was
Pit
like
of
Bones
Horror,
and something
yeah.
else.
Pit of Horror is what I was thinking of.
Yeah, there's like, I think Snoop Dogg's Pit of Horror, and then there's like Bone, I think is his other horror movie. But yeah, that's the one, like any people that were around in that time, you all, the famous quote, where the leprechaun gets stoned in the hood. And he's like, a friend with weed is a friend indeed. And they even kind of repeat that in the second one, too, because he, I think it's a priest or something ends up stealing his gold and using it to build a community center or something. And these other guys get a hold of it, and basically they all kind of get rich of it. And then someone accidentally digs him up where he's been buried, and he goes back trying to, and he ends up going to this house party to try to get some of his gold from a guy. And runs across somebody, kills a guy. Well, the guy's like, I think smoking a bong, and just gets stoned off his ass, and then stumbles into the kitchen and is like, gets the munchies and tries to go into the fridge, and then someone accidentally locks him in the fridge because he's in there reading the fridge. Somebody just shuts the door on him,
which is crazy because of all of his magical powers and everything else, you would think he'd be able to get out of it pretty
yeah.
easy.
I mean, he was stoned. What do you expect? But I remember there's one scene in there where. These kids are running from him, and he ends up, this cop stops him or something. He ends up killing the cop and steals the police car, but he's so short that he can't reach the pedal. So he cuts off the dude's leg and uses the leg to. So when you see the kids, they're all running. They see the cop car, and they're like, "Oh, the cops are here! Yay!"
Oh,
and
I think I was in the first film that. I remember him killing the cop.
It's in one of them, but you see the cop car pull up, and the kids are like, "Oh, we're saved!" And the door opens up, and you see the boot step out. Well, then it falls over, and it's the severed leg, and then the leprechaun jumps out and starts chasing him again. Oh yeah, that was just a messed up series of movies. But yeah, they've recently rebooted it, and instead of War It Is now, it's, if anyone watches the W, because now it's owned by the WWE, and Hornswoggle, which is this leprechaun wrestler, is now playing the leprechaun in the new movies, which I've...
Yeah. His little sidekick, I believe his name is Little Bastard, but dude, that shillelagh that he runs around with... Dude, that motherfucker is badass. Like,
yeah, I've not seen the reboot, but I think there's another sequel coming out pretty soon, or at least that's what it said online. So maybe I have to check.
Well,
out
if it's
the...
online, you know it's true.
Oh, yeah, and aliens too.
Yeah,
I'm not saying it's aliens, but
it's probably aliens.
Yeah.
So, any final thoughts or arguments or?
I've got one more Irish fact.
All right, let's hear it.
Have you heard the term drowning the shamrock?
No.
That's I guess, drinking term, but it originally came from a tradition of floating a shamrock on top of your whiskey and drinking it. And if you would do that, it was supposed to bring you good luck if you would drink your whiskey with a shamrock in it.
So I guess that's why now, I order a Guinness, and the interesting thing is, in the head of the beer is to try to draw the shamrock. I guess that's where it comes from.
It brings you good luck if you remember to drown the shamrock. So of all the, what's your favorite, Irish movie tradition, whatnot?
My favorite tradition is beer drinking. out of the films we talked about...
But do yourself a favor and drink some Guinness, because usually the green beer you get at the bar is usually the cheapest beer. It's like Coors Light or whatnot.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely... let's talk about that for a minute. I mean, Guinness gets all the praise, but, there are some other good Irish beers out there. Smithwick's comes to mind.
Smithwick's like... What's the other one? There's Smithwick's, and is it Boddington? Is that Irish as well?
I am not 100% sure on that one.
Yeah, but I know for sure Guinness, and then, Smithwick's, which I think is also made by Guinness.
But, O'Hara's is one I have not tried, but that was rated, one of the top 10, Irish beers. Harp.
Harp was the other one I was trying to think of.
Is another good one. Kilkenny Irish Cream Ale. That would be one that I'd love to try to pick up if we can.
I definitely want to make a trip to Ireland one of these days.
And you got Murphy's Irish Red.
Yeah, there's a lot of good drinking culture in Ireland. And remember, if you're gonna do Irish car bombs, it's Bailey's, Jameson, and Guinness. That's the proper recipe. I think that about wraps us up on our St. Patrick's Day special. We'll be right back with some Beer 30.
Stay tuned.
Now you will receive us.
We do not ask for your poor or your hungry.
We do not want your tired and sick.
It is your corrupt weak clan.
It is your evil that will be sought by us.
With every breath, we shall hunt them down.
Each day, we will spill their blood till it rains down from the skies.
Do not kill. Do not rape. Do not steal. These are principles which every man of every faith can embrace.
These are not polite suggestions. These are codes of behavior. And those of you that ignore them will pay the dearest cost.
There are varying degrees of evil. We are you lesser farms of filth, not to push the bounds and cross over into true corruption, into our domain.
But if you do, one day you will look behind you and you will see we three. And on that day, you will reap it.
And we will send you to whatever God you wish.
And shepherds we shall be, for thee, my lord, for thee. power has descended forth from thy hand.
Let
me swiftly carry out thy command. So we shall flow ever forth to thee, and teeming with souls shall it ever be.
In nomine patri,
et fili,
Spiritus Sancti.
Hey man, it's almost that time.
What time is it?
Beer 30.
The Booze Hounds return.
And we're back with Beer 30. What are we drinking today, Brad?
Today we're drinking the Innocent Gun, the Irish Whiskey Aged Stout. And I gotta say, this motherfucker is delicious.
Yeah, I've not had a bad Innocent Gun yet. I mean, all their beers have been really good.
So, yeah, I mean, basically this stout here is, you know, carefully matured for 60 days prior to its release. And, you know, aged in Irish whiskey oak chips and, you know, very rich, complex beer with a variety of smooth, with a velvety smooth finish. And, you know, definitely some dark chocolate and coffee taste here.
Yeah, like all the Innocent Gun beers are aged in, like, whiskey, scotch. I mean, they have a rum barrel one, but yeah, they're all it's an aged beer, but like each beer has like a different kind of whiskey taste to it. And like I said, the Irish one, like since this is our St. Patty's Day episode, we figured we'd try the Irish.
That's
whiskey
not even
aged.
A thing. You've disgraced the Irish.
Say what?
Yeah.
What'd I do?
Yeah, we'll go into it in the main segment. There's a whole cultural thing. You just completely Americanized their holiday there. That's not acceptable.
I don't care. This is America, damn it. In America, we call it St. Patty's Day and drink green beer.
Aye. Any excuse to drink beer, I'm happy with.
And no, it's not green. It's kind of a dark brown chocolate color.
But, I mean, it's a damn good beer. You know, interesting thing on this one is, you know, the recommended temperature to serve it at is actually between 39 and 42 degrees Fahrenheit, which is quite a bit colder than what, you know, most of your stouts and stuff are, you know, recommended to be served at. So, yeah, another little tidbit to keep in mind.
Yeah. According to their description, has smells of chocolate, roasted coffee beans and dried fruit with a taste of earthy hops, rich malt, and a nice cocoa bitterness. The finish is complex and satisfying with a lingering oaky sweetness and a creamy mouthfeel.
And I know how much you like your creamy mouthfeels.
So, you know, have a few of these.
Fuck ass! I just had to work it in on this segment.
Dude. Dude. No. Back to the beer. Yeah, you know, have a few of these. Bring out some Jameson for St. Patrick's Day. And, yeah.
I like that
finish
better.
Finish it off with some Guinness.
Yeah. Where are our kilts? That's what I'm wondering. Definitely need some kilts.
Yeah, because, I mean, it's a Scottish beer. So this, I mean, a few years ago, you couldn't find this here in America. And then it just kind of blew up. I mean, Innocent Gun is like everywhere now.
Yeah, and it's a good thing too. So I definitely like what they're doing with the craft beer scene. And you know, one thing about me is, you know, typically I'm more of a whiskey scotch drinker, so for me I like my beer to have that alcohol taste that a lot of folks, you know, typically try to shy away from.
And I think their original, which is aged in scotch barrels, I think is probably my favorite one. But yeah, this Irish whiskey is good.
So, Joe, what are you saying as far as the official Untappd review from you, my friend?
Oh, this is at least a 4 for me.
I think I'm going to bump it up a little bit, and I'm going 4.5.
All right. And what's our Untappd identity so people can friend us and join along in the beer
Cigar
season?
Nerds. I mean, we kept it very simple.
I'm actually going to remember that one.
One day I'm actually going to link it to the Facebook and the website and do all those things that we talked about doing at one point that we never got around to.
Yeah, so look up Cigar Nerds on the Untappd app and follow our ratings. And we'll be right back with some science.
Stay tuned.
When one speaks of the perfect symmetry between science fiction, fantasy, and horror podcasting, with a special emphasis on Doctor Who, one should become a connoisseur of transmissions from Atlantis. featuring JC and Rita Della Torre. While both will have a passionate and vigorous argument on the subject of the day, they do so with the utmost respect.
What? That wasn't stupid.
You're stupid.
You're stupid.
You're stupid. Stupid. And dignity.
Commander Riker here. I'm by the book. Yeah.
Prime Directive Kenning.
Prime Directive.
Join Transmissions from Atlantis weekly at transmissionsfromatlantis.com and part of the ESO network. Yes. It's quite good, really.
In the middle of the earth, in the land of Shire, lives a brave little hobbit whom we all admire. With his long wooden pipe, fuzzy woolly toes, he lives in a hobbit hole and everybody knows him. Bilbo, Bilbo Baggins, he's only 3 feet tall. Bilbo, Bilbo Baggins, the bravest little hobbit of them all.
And we're back. This kind of a sad note here, but we wanted to kind of pay tribute to a great actor, musician, director that we lost this week, Mr. Leonard Nimoy.
Yeah, definitely sad about the passing here of Leonard. You know, a great, great actor. Like you said, I mean, poet, singer, songwriter, photographer. I guess probably most famously known for his role as Spock on the Star Trek franchise, even though he's been in many, many other, you know, films and voiceovers and all kinds of things.
Yeah, I mean, if you start with, like, he played the chief science officer on the Star Trek, Starship Enterprise, from like the original series all the way up through. I mean, he did guest spots on Next Generation, maybe DS. I'm not even like the newer stuff. I mean, he's, since Vulcans technically age slower, he's pretty much showed up in damn near everything Star Trek, and even with the new J.J. Abrams reboot, you know, he brought Spock back for those as well. So, I mean, he's been, you know, part of pretty much, you know, everybody's childhood. And it's probably one of the reasons I originally, you know, got into science and stuff was, you know, the character of Spock and his logical pursuits. So, I mean, he's probably had a profound effect on, you know, every geek's culture through for a very long time.
Yeah, I mean, just, you know, looking here, you know, I mean, he did, you know, freaking, you know, the voice narrator and the IMAX documentary film Destiny in Space, narration of the English version of the Sega Dreamcast game, Seaman, and, you know.
Yeah, I think it's about every science documentary back in the day was narrated by Nimoy. I mean, there's a lot.
I mean, you got
of,
everything, you know,
a lot
the
of
Time
stuff.
Machine, Journey to the Center of the Earth, The Lost World, The Invisible Man, you know, First Man in the Moon. I mean, just all over, you know, the Sci-Fi Channel.
And there's not only that is, I mean, yeah, everyone knows him from Star Trek, but he did a lot of other things too. I mean, right after Star Trek, one of his first things he got into was the old Mission Impossible series. He was in 49 episodes of that, and he played a character called the Great Paris. He was a actor and magician who used his skills as an actor to, you know, become a spy. I mean, he was always like dressing up in weird costumes and disguises and stuff, and, you know, helping solve the whatever the spy mission of the week was. I mean, he also was in the original Body Snatchers movie playing Dr. Kabir or something, who was like a psychiatrist or whatever. And I mean, he was, yeah, as aliens or whatever is taking over the town, he was like one of the few guys that were just like, you know, freaking out and trying to figure out what was going on. It was kind of a scary ass role.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he went on to be honored by the Symphony, you know, Symphony Space, and you know, renaming of you know, one of the theaters to you know, the Leonard Nimoy Talayla Theater, maybe. I probably just butchered that after.
Yeah, and he was also, you know,
appeared in. I can remember some of the Futurama and Simpsons episodes that.
Yeah, the Simpson episode I think was hilarious.
Appeared as both himself as well as Spock.
Yeah, the one I remember for him is Marge versus the Monorail episode where they tried to bring a monorail to to Springfield, and he was one of like the celebrity guests or whatnot. Yeah, I mean the dude never had problems kind of making fun of himself and his career. I mean, even more recently, I've seen him. He did like a guest spot on Big Bang Theory, where he voiced a Spock action figure that was giving Sheldon like, you know, life advice.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy, you know. I mean, it definitely a legacy that, you know, he'll continue to, you know, carry on. I mean, you know, he's going to go down in one of the, you know, as, you know, potentially one of the greatest, you know, actors, producers, you know, out of Hollywood.
In the character of Spock, too, he developed a lot of that himself. Like, the, for instance, the Vulcan neck pinch was his idea. Because I think in the original script, he was supposed to, like, basically knock somebody out with the butt of his phaser. But he was like, I don't see Spock doing anything violent like that. So he came up with the Vulcan neck pinch because he thought that would fit his character better. And even the, you know, the famous salute and live long and prosper speech was something that he came up with that was kind of based on an old Jewish priest prayer that that's something else that
Huh, I did not know that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that everyone, even if you're not a huge Star Trek fan, I mean, you know the hand symbol and the live long and prosper. I mean, the Vulcan neck pinch have been used in so many films and stuff, and as like a joke. I mean, I've seen that show up in like all kind of movies.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's also, you know, known for his photography and everything else. You know, he studied photography at the University of California. You know, and actually had you know, some of his works featured in you know, the Massachusetts Museum of Contemporary Art. So,
I mean, one of the things I didn't realize, 'cause I know he directed a bunch of the Star Trek movies, but he also directed Three Men and a Baby. It was like one of the biggest comedies of 87. Huh. Like, I did not realize that was a Leonard Nimoy project until I was you know, looking up information for this. So, I mean, the dude could direct and come up with just about anything. I think one of my favorite memories is I've always been obsessed with paranormal, aliens, whatnot, and he used to be the kind of the host and the narrator of In Search Of. Like the old, you know, they would, you know, investigate Bigfoot and aliens and ghosts and whatnot. It was like a series in the late 70s, but I remember watching it as a kid, like on like reruns on PBS or whatever. And I mean, that show is one of the reasons I probably got into the ghosts and weird shit later on.
Yeah, I mean, I was just, you know, reading here about, you know, him being survived by his wife, two children, six grandchildren, a great grandchild, and his elder brother, Melvin. And, you know, they were posting some of his quotes and stuff, you know, from Twitter. And one of them that stood out to me was, "A life is like a garden. Perfect moments can be had, but not preserved except in memory."
Yeah, I think that was actually his final tweet as well. So, I mean, even up into the end, he was, you know, saying some deep stuff to us. And was it some of his more recent Fringe too? And the like I said, he played a character in the Fringe series. Was probably one of the last big things that I remember seeing him in. And it was, like I said, I dug his character as Dr. Bell, I think it was his name.
Yep.
But yeah, I mean, and speaking of stuff from our childhood, he was also the voice of Galvatron in the original Transformers movie.
Hell yeah! So,
and then more recently, whatever the one of the last Transformers movies, he voiced one of the Transformers in it and kind of brought him back to the series. But yeah, I mean, the we could sit there and list his credits like, you know, all day long. And I said that song we played at the opening, you know, he was also a musician and released several albums and wrote several books.
Yeah, I'm going to have to go back and check out some of his music because, and as well as his photography, I just saw, you know, a couple of, you know, images of his and stuff that I was just like, damn, this dude had, you know, talents all over the spectrum.
Yeah, I mean, one of the, some of his books too, because I noticed his first biography that he wrote was called I am not Spock.
And kinda, then he came back.
You know, like 20 years later, he wrote a new one. He was like, all right, I am Spock. So he kind of came to terms with it, you know, being known as and embraced, you know, being, you know, forever remembered as that character.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just looking, you know, scrolling through some of his credits and everything else. And
yeah, I think he even did a couple guest spots on TJ Hooker with you know, Shatner's show after Star Trek.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, it's crazy. I mean, you know, he definitely have a legacy that, you know, will continue to carry on. I mean,
yeah, I mean that, I mean, I don't know how many future scientists he, you know, he, you know, inspired in that character. Yeah, there, I mean, there's so many people that have probably, you know, got into the sciences from,
well,
from watching him back,
you know,
in the day.
There was a former NASA astronaut, Buzz Aldrin, that, you know, called Nimoy a fellow space traveler because he helped make the journey into the final frontier accessible to us all. So, I mean, I don't think there's any greater, you know, summary, you know, and even, you know, President Obama, you know, who met Nimoy in 2007, you know, basically, you know, remembered him as a, you know, lifelong lover of arts, humanities, a supporter of the sciences, generous with, you know, all his talent and all his time. And I mean, you look through all of his credits and everything that he was involved in, and I mean, you know, I don't think you can say truer words.
Oh yeah, this, just looking online, because I said this all kind of broke while we were at a show this weekend, and like I said, all the social media and stuff was like blowing up. There was even whatever astronauts on the International Space Station was tweeting photos of, you know, doing the Spock salute out the window of the station, you know, with the Earth in the background. I haven't seen, it's got such a big thing that the Canadian $5 bill, people have been modifying it to look like Spock, and like the government has actually said, please stop modifying our $5 bill, because it's become such a big thing to Spock their currency.
Yep. So I mean, I just, yeah, looking here, I just found his discography, so we'll need to, you know, check that out, and, you know.
I gotta say, his music's better than Shatner's. That's what little I've listened to. Yeah, he was, you know, 83 years old, and has, you know, affected every, you know, every geek that I know. I mean, even, like I said, in my father's time, when, you know, the show was originally on, you know, there's, you know, everyone has a memory of, you know, who Leonard Nimoy is.
Yeah, I mean, even, you know, my dad and my aunt, you know, called to, you know, say, hey, did you hear about the news and everything? I mean, you know, and they're not really people I would associate with, you know, any type of geek culture or anything else. But, you know, he had an impact, like you said, even in their childhood. So,
yeah. And I mean, his voice work, too. I mean, he voiced a lot of cartoon works. And like, I think he was in the whatever the Disney Atlantis movie. I mean, the guy has been in everything. And like I said, this, we just wanted to take a time out and honor Mr. Leonard Nimoy, and we'll be right back.
I have been, and always shall be, your friend. Live long and prosper.
And now it's time for Blowing Smoke.
And welcome back to our Blowing Smoke segment, where we, it's our interview segment of the show, where we hunt down cool people, and this got cool topics to talk about. Today we're here with Martin Gillard, director of the Joe Lanner Toy Convention. Welcome to the show.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. And yourself, sir?
Excellent, excellent. Just a little cold, that's all.
So tell us a little about what, you know, you do as director of the of this convention.
Well, I've been very fortunate, actually, to not a lot of people know that Joe Lanza is actually part of a nonprofit called the Cody Lane Foundation. Mm-hmm. And I am the project coordinator for the Cody Lane Foundation, and one of the most visible events that the foundation does is Joe Lanza and the Great Atlanta Toy Convention, which is a convention that really has come into its own the last few years. However, the show itself has been going on for about 15 years. But what I do is really coordinate and direct all the activities for the event and work with all the different participants to make it happen.
Cool. What is the say the foundation that y'all support? What's some of the things that they are trying to do?
Actually, it's very exciting. The mission of the Cody Lane Foundation is to open a toy and diorama museum here in the Atlanta area, and so all the proceeds and profits from Joanna and the Great Atlanta Toy Convention funnel directly into that. And so that is one day we certainly hope to make that a reality where people can come and enjoy huge toy collections and huge dioramas. We've been known for years to have pretty remarkable dioramas. There are many very talented people that we keep coming across who are very creative and able to put their creativity and work with toys and make some pretty spectacular scale models and things like that. So that would be one of the key components of the museum.
Yeah, that's I've always liked dioramas. I mean, I think that's – I was looking at some of the pictures last night on the Joanna website, and I mean, those look amazing. I'm looking forward to seeing some of those. It's fun to look at, you know, vintage toys that are, you know, new in the box or, you know, still in the box or anything, but it's even more awesome to see them, you know, being used.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, let's face it, when any of us first get a toy, our first instinct is not to keep it in the box. It's to take it out and play with it and give it some personality and some character. And so I guess this has gone to another level there where people really are working with their toys and kind of making them, you know, making them personal and making them their own. So I like that. I think that's great.
Oh yeah. I've not been to one of these conventions yet. I just kind of recently found out about it, but I'm definitely coming down this weekend to check it out.
Oh, absolutely.
And it's not just a toy swap meet. Like, yeah, I mean, you've got panels and other shows and stuff going on too, correct?
We do, yes. like I had mentioned earlier, it kind of morphed over the years. And initially, it really was just a big space with dealer tables. And through the years, it's kind of grown and grown. So, yeah, at this point, I mean, we have a variety of different panels going on both Saturday and Sunday when the show's open to the public. We have other events going on as well. There's special packages that folks purchase. And there, some of the events included there would be, one of our special guests is Radio Cult, favorite band of ours and friends of ours, and they perform a concert on Saturday night. There is the famous parachute drop in the lobby. There is the famous lobby swap, where literally folks bring a tub of product and they can go ahead and trade it or sell it, and that then takes the entire lobby of the hotel on Friday night. And we've got film festival, where people submit films off toys, so, you know, stop animation. All kinds of interesting takes on, you know, how they, again, are creative with their toys. We've got a State of the Hobby Roundtable where we have different folks who are in the industry talking about where the hobby is going. And, yeah, I mean, there's really quite a lot going on. It's really not just you can come browse 200 tables full of toys and pop culture. But you can also go ahead if you want and chill out. We're going to have a theater room playing all kinds of movies all day. You can watch Monty Python or anime or Doctor Who, or that'll be going on. You can go attend a panel. You can go ahead and look at all the dioramas. You can bring your own diorama or custom figure. We have a custom figure and diorama contest. We've got a cosplay contest. So yes, there's quite a lot of things going on. There should be a little something for everybody who likes pop culture.
Yeah, I think I still got a box of G.I. Joes in the basement somewhere. We have to build our own diorama. We build like a small cigar shop.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, you know, it's interesting because, you know, the last couple of years with the with Monster High, for instance, one toy line from Mattel really exploding. You know, we see a lot of people doing custom Monster High dolls. And they look phenomenal. I mean, you would, you know, you look at them twice and you're like, wow, man, that somebody made that? It looks like it just came out of a store. So it's great to see people's creativity.
Yeah, I didn't, you know, really know anything about the modding of toys till I had a friend of mine's big Transformer collector. And he started, you know, showing me websites where you can buy like custom parts for your Transformers and modify them and, you know, add these special edition guns and whatnot. So yeah, that's kind of cool that people are, you know, doing creative stuff with old products.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And as a matter of fact, you mentioned Transformers. We're going to have a panel on Transformers with four Transformers experts. So that's always fun. And a lot of folks, we had one last year and it was very well attended. So all you Transformers fans out there, you probably want to come check that out.
Of all the toys and collections stuff going on, what's your particular favorite out of you know, is there a certain toy that you have in your collection or a certain, you know, brand that's high on your list?
Yeah, absolutely. I was born in England, and then I think in probably 1970 I got my first. It wasn't a G.I. Joe, but it was a the UK's version of G.I. Joe called Action Man, put out by a company called Palitoy that licensed it from Hasbro. And it was virtually the same, and they were, you know, they did a lot of similarities, but they also went a lot further. So I was fortunate, actually, to still have a couple of Action Men from my childhood. And so I am a big, you know, Action Man, G.I. Joe fan, especially the 1/6 scale from the 70s specifically. And then I also like, around the same time in the 70s, there was another line of action figures put out by Marks and called Johnny West. So it was like basically a cowboy cool. with molded on clothes and then tons and tons of accessories. And I don't know why, but these figures seem to fascinate me at this point, even though I had actually never seen them when I was a child. But with all the toy shows that we've been putting on, you know, bit by bit, I began to see more and more of these figures. And I'm like, man, these are so cool. So that's my other passion right now. Those two toy lines are really, really what I like.
Oh, yeah. I've seen the, because when by the time I started playing with G.I. Joes, they were those, the 3-inch plastic ones. But yeah, I grew up playing with my dad's collection. He had like the old 70s G.I. Joe, where it was, you know, the vehicles are actually made out of metal. There was almost like a Tonka toy. I mean, you could really abuse those. And like in the older ones too, they always had like, you know, clothes and little small gun belts and weapons and stuff. Just the amount of detail that went into some of those older G.I. Joes were always impressed me.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And that's one of the reasons why, you know, with all those small accessories, a lot of times, just like anything with any toy line, the accessories are the hard things to come by. And that's where a lot of the value is in an item, is really if it has all its accessories, because they were so easy to lose, you know, a little weapon, a little knife or a pistol or something.
Things got eaten by vacuum cleaners when I was a kid.
Yes, absolutely, yeah.
And the real hair beards and stuff on some of those old G.I. Joes.
Yeah, well, those are the ones that I like. That's when that started in the 70s. The flocked hair, yeah, and those are the ones that I guess relate to, because those were the ones that were around when I was growing up.
So what's some of the guests and stuff that you're going to have this weekend? This weekend.
Well, it'll be next weekend, yeah.
Well, when this comes out, it'll be this weekend.
Okay, gotcha. Just wanted to make sure.
Yeah.
Okay, well, Larry Hama, who is a writer-artist who actually came up with the real American hero G.I. Joe line. He kind of wrote the whole thing, came up with all the characters, and he's going to be at the show. And we're always thrilled to have him. He's actually come for quite a number of years. He wasn't able to make it last year due to sickness, but he's going to be back this year. And so that's going to be great. And he will actually be doing a panel as well. And he'll be on hand to sign books for folks and do signatures and do sketches and all kinds of stuff. We also have Tom Feaster, who is a G.I. Joe artist. He's done work for Image and DC, and he will be there. We have Jeremy Fisher, who's actually an animator with Robot Chicken. He will also be doing a panel on animation.
That's a panel I'd like to see there. I'm a big fan of Robot Chicken.
And then we're going to have Don Teams. He is one of the walkers from The Walking Dead. And he was on seasons 2, 3, and 4. And he will also be there to sign autographs. And he will also be involved in a Walking Dead panel that we have. And then, as I mentioned, also we're going to have Radio Cult there. And we have a variety of other folks that are going to be helping and doing panels. Like I mentioned, we've got a few folks that are doing Transformers panels. I've got a Monster High panel. And going to have the folks from Galactic Quest comic books. They're going to be doing a panel as well on developing character toys.
Oh, that's cool. So we've got Galactic Quest in a while.
We've got a lot going on.
Sweet. I noticed there was different packages and stuff. This Commander's package that your whatever special deal of the weekend. What is all that about?
The Commander's package enables, basically it includes an exclusive figure. So for the last probably 4 or 5 years, we have put out our own figure. It's a 1/6 scale G.I. Joe type figure, and the last 4 years have been a steampunk theme. And so this particular year we have a steampunk superhero type character that kind of looks a little bit like the comic character Bullet Man. And so he's basically a steampunk vigilante, like a Bullet Man vigilante. And the Commander's package gets that particular figure, as well as a 1/6 exclusive t-shirt, a Hawaiian shirt, a 1/6 Hawaiian shirt, and then a regular t-shirt. And then that also enables people to get into all the different activities that start on Friday and basically go all the way through Sunday.
And that's going to be
only $99 gets you all of that. So you get to participate in every single thing at the show. You get to walk away with an exclusive figure, with a custom box, custom outfits, weapons, the whole nine yards. So, yeah, that's one package. Then we've got an assistant Commander's package that basically gets you everything except the figure.
Cool.
And then finally we've got a cadet package, and the cadet package will get you to participate in all the events on Saturday and Sunday, but you won't be walking out with any swag unless you go buy it. So basically no t-shirts or anything like that, but you will be able to participate in all the events on Saturday night. And that includes, as I had mentioned before, the parachute drop, and we have trivia. We're going to have the film festival, and then the concert by Radio Cult.
Yeah, I want to see the parachute drop. We were there last weekend for the NackerCon, so that's a big lobby to just drop some parachutes from.
Oh, it's amazing. You should see when there's like 15, 20 parachutes coming down from the 15th floor. It looks really cool.
Yeah, I mean, as a kid, I would have loved to, like, you know, throw in some G.I. Joes off the 15th floor. Those parachute ones were always my favorite.
You just never could get high enough. Well, the funny thing is, I mean, you know, here you have, you know, the age range of folks at the show runs the gamut from, like, you know, granddads with their grandsons or granddaughters, and everybody's so excited. I mean, so you've got, you know, 4-year-olds to like 60-year-olds playing with the toys and throwing G.I. Joes off the balcony. So it's cool. It's a really fun time. And the kind of environment we're trying to create is just a big family get together kind of thing. And, you know, we don't take it too seriously. It's about enjoying each other's company in the presence of all these great toys. And you kind of take a walk down memory lane and just remember some simpler times in your life.
Yeah, but I'm definitely going to try to make it down there. And this is going to be the 13th through the 15th at the Century Center Marriott in Atlanta. Where can people follow you and find out more about the convention?
I beg your pardon?
I said, where can people go to find out more about the convention and more about the
charity? Oh, yeah, absolutely. Just go to jolanta.org.
All right. And we thank you on coming to the Nerd Cave and letting us know about this event. We'll be right back, folks.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
And now it's time for all things nerdy in Nerd News.
And welcome to Nerd News. Joe's about to bust a gut from a previous joke that you guys didn't get to catch because we were off air.
All right, so what's in the news today, Brad?
I guess with everything that we've learned, it's everything Marvel still. I guess we should pick up with Agent Carter. The
final episode has aired. So, what do you think of the series so far?
You know what? It took me a few episodes to really get hooked on the series, but as of right now, I'm suckered in, and I was really disappointed that now I've got to wait.
Yeah, I mean it kind of had a slow build for me, but then once those like last several episodes, it got really, you know, more action oriented, especially like once, you know, Peggy went and teamed up with the Howling Commandos again. I mean, I think it really took off from there, and it's got kind of badass.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean for me, it was like you said, it was a little bit slow at first, but the action picks up. And you know, last night's episode, I don't want to give away too many spoilers, or not last night, that was Shield. See, once
yeah,
again
be,
you know,
be a week or so. Yeah. But yeah, so what do you think of how it kind of wrapped up the current storyline without giving too many spoilers?
As of right now, I'm okay with it. It left me, you know, definitely wanting more and everything else. You know, I'm really curious to see how everything truly plays out between, you know, Howard and Peggy and everything else.
I liked how it kind of wrapped up and kind of finished out the storyline that we've gotten so far. That way, if there isn't a season two or whatnot, then, you know, we're not left with any kind of big, you know, cliffhangers or anything. It kind of wrapped up most of the main storyline, but then left like some extras there for them to pursue another series. But I kind of wish it would kind of ended with, all right, now we're starting S.H.I.E.L.D. You know, I'd like to see, you know,
yeah,
maybe
which I think
the forming of S.H.I.E.L.D. and then maybe like some early missions of S.H.I.E.L.D. in the next season.
I wonder if it's not intended purposely to, you know, essentially slow play into S.H.I.E.L.D. I mean, it's, you know, one of those things where, I mean, S.H.I.E.L.D.'s got a good thing going for it, but, you know, at the same time, I don't know. I mean, me personally, I'd like to see, you know, what the hell's left for Peggy Carter and see, you know, more of her development and some of the other characters. And
I've not seen, like, the one-off. I think it came out on one of the DVDs. My DVD collection's behind, where it kind of shows, like, that forming of S.H.I.E.L.D., but then, yeah, maybe like the next season they'll jump ahead a couple years and it'll be like the early missions of Peggy and S.H.I.E.L.D. You know, so like I said, it could, they could continue with what they got for a little while, or like I said, just kind of jump ahead and do some early S.H.I.E.L.D. missions and such.
Yeah, I mean, I will say that, you know, seeing, you know, Dottie laying in a pool of blood on an airplane wing and then it panning back and she's mysteriously disappeared. I wonder when she creeps back up into the series. I mean,
yeah,
that
of course
was,
you know, you never the bad guys never, you know, really disappear.
No. And, dude, I got to say, she got a hell of an upgrade, too, from going to her apartment to Howard Stark saying, oh, here, no, you could just, here's a beautiful home.
Y'all just stay in my mansion.
So, I mean, once again, you know, the series has me hooked at this point. I really hope that, you know, they continue on with development and everything else, because I would like you said, you know, to see the series continue, and then, you know, maybe at the end of season two or something, then you start seeing, you know, the more forming of S.H.I.E.L.D.
I liked Jarvis's character this year. I thought he was kind of a cool thing, especially that one where they were going back and, like, questioning all the girls that Howard had hooked up with, and they just all kept slapping him. Yeah, I'd like to see more of that character. Also, you know, we just had the return of the second half of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. So how'd you like that first episode we've seen so far?
Well, I like the fact that we're seeing a lot more of the Inhumans and everything else. And they finally
actually, you know, said that, you know, like, you know, you're inhuman.
Yeah, we're definitely seeing the term, you know, Terrigenesis get thrown around quite a bit, which just kind of tickles my geekdom.
Yeah, because the Inhumans are going to be the new mutants in the Marvel Universe, since we can't really use mutants.
And once again, I don't want to try to give too many spoilers away, but, you know, seeing Coulson and his actions this time around,
Coulson's gone full gangster. He is straight up Fury now.
Yeah, I mean, that was some definite Nick Fury shenanigans he's pulled.
Oh yeah, he's fully back in, like, total badassery. But
yeah, it is crazy too with Sky now, you know, and her little episode that's going on. So I'm kind of curious to see how, you know, that plays out.
Well, in the comic books, the character they've kind of alluded to her being was, like, one of Nick Fury's, like, top people. I mean, she was like a badass, so it's gonna be cool to see how that goes. But in other Marvel news, dun dun dun
dun dun dun,
the
you can't lead into it and not continue.
Well, I was waiting for you to pick it up, jackass. This is your segment. We got a new trailer for Age of Ultron.
Yep, this is actually the third trailer, and this trailer looks absolutely badass. I mean, I'm, like, sitting here, I just want to watch, you know, the entire full feature film now. I'm just, damn it.
I mean, we finally see, Quicksilver and the Scarlet Witch, and it looks like she's kind of, like, casting spells on some people, so that may be why you see Hulk and Tony fighting, or Thor trying to choke out Tony at one point in the trailer. So, you know, maybe there's some kind of, like, you know, mental magic.
No, I tell you what happened is, you know, Thor's over there, you know, freaking throwing around, oh, that's the best you got? Well, no, motherfucker, here you go. Here's an entire, you know, freaking slew of, you know, people coming after you. Wait, you just got to ask, huh?
And we also, this is the first time we've seen, we see a lot more of Ultron in this, but it's also the first time we've seen kind of, was it the Vision?
Yes.
Like, you get to see it, just a kind of his face a little bit, which... It's going to be the same actor who's done the voice of Jarvis throughout, you know, the Iron Man and Avengers and stuff. So he finally gets a role where you can see his face.
And, you know, speaking of all things Marvel and everything else, just in our, you know, alerts, apparently AMC theaters, at least select AMC theaters, are going to be doing the Ultimate Marvel Marathon coming up here. Looks to be April 29th.
They're going to play every single MCU movie in a row, leading up to the release of Age of Ultron.
Yes. So, and I think Age of Ultron is slated to be in 3D. That's the only one that I see listed as 3D. But, yeah, I mean, you're talking from 6 p.m. to one night to 7 p.m. the following night of nothing but Marvel madness.
Yeah, it's like 11 films in a row. So if you can stand sitting down for well over 24 hours once you watch every single movie, that's gonna be, and also if like that, it's $65 to watch the entire marathon,
which if you do the math works out to be like $5.90. I mean you can't go to a theater, even a matinee, if you can, $5.90 anymore
if you can sit through all that. And also, for anybody who actually goes through the marathon, at the end of it there you get a special edition Avengers medal. I mean, it looks like a war medal or something, with like a ribbon and a big Avengers A. So like I said, if you can suffer through, yeah, 24 hours of action, you get an award at the end of it.
So, I mean, that's almost worth it in itself. I mean, just I don't know, man. It's got to be something exclusive. I mean, it can't just be, oh, here's a ribbon with a freaking cheap, you know, plastic, you know, medallion or something. But
I'm severely tempted to do it. I think I'm already off those days. I may have to go buy some tickets tomorrow and check this out.
Yeah, so the next thing on the list is, I guess we're still playing in the, you know, Marvel Disney realm here, but the six original Star Wars films that are going to be retold in a Lego TV miniseries. This is going to be told from the perspective of R2-D2 and C-3PO.
Yeah, I mean, the Lego movie was huge, and a lot of the whatever Lego straight-to-video movies, like Lego Batman and stuff, has all gotten real good reviews. So I'm interested to see how this is gonna turn out.
Yeah, I mean, I've been a big fan. I mean, not only the, you know, TV series and stuff that are the movies. I think this is going to be on the Disney XD, which I guess is like Disney On Demand or something like that that folks can subscribe to. But, you know, also the Lego games have not been bad, especially from the Star Wars franchise. I've played a few of those, the first ones,
but I haven't played a lot of the Lego games. But
I think I got, you know, Star Wars Legos 3 when I bought my hard drive from my Xbox that came pre-installed and stuff. And I don't know, that was another reason I had to go back and watch Star Wars, because it would, you know, ask you to switch to particular characters with particular abilities. And I'm like, who the hell is that? Because it doesn't give you a name or a description, so... You know, probably not best to jump into the last game of the series. Just an FYI. And with that, I guess we'll drop a little hint here for the folks as to our upcoming segment here. I just want to go back and play this game on NES.
DuckTales is coming back. They're rebooting the series.
All right. I mean, just had to throw that out there. I mean, you know. So, yeah, I mean, we're going to get a new series coming out in 2017. You know, they've already, you know, Scrooge McDuck as well as his grandnephews together with Donald Duck. And a lot of the classic DuckTales characters are actually, you know, the whole cast members will be on set to, you know, return to this latest series.
Sweet. They have, like, you know, Launchpad and whatever his, like, his superhero alter ego that he would, or not, wouldn't Launchpad, is the other guy that had, like, the, kind of like the DuckTale version of Iron Man in that show was always
Gyro
cool.
Gearloose?
Yeah.
Yeah, and then, you know, like you said, you got Pilot, Launchpad, McQuack, you know, Miss Beakley, Webigail, Vanderquack, and Flintheart Glomagold.
Alrighty then.
Yeah, so, I mean, yeah, we're just taking it from the top. So, I mean, this is rattling shit off my brain. But, I mean, I haven't seen anything. Apparently there was a game that came out in 2013 or something for DuckTales, but I hadn't played one since, you know, the original game on NES.
I remember hearing it you know, popping up, you know, everybody was playing that song again, but I never actually played that new game when it came out, but I heard it was good.
You know, so speaking of you know, things that are coming back, we'll drop the folks here another little
you've got another teaser for us,
modified teaser, if you will. And if that doesn't give it away, then you folks are too young to be listening to this podcast anyway,
because that is the metal version of the Inspector Gadget theme.
Yes, and this is brought to you by the band Power Glove. If you folks aren't familiar with Power Glove, definitely give them a listen, because they are some of the nerdiest metal, you know, covers ever.
Yeah, Netflix is bringing back a bunch of old cartoons, and as a new, you know, Netflix series starting this month with Inspector Gadget.
Yeah, so it's going to be a 26 episode reboot. Basically, you'll get to revisit the adventures of the half machine, you know, cops.
Starting, yeah, it's, and from what it looks like, it's going to be like a CGI style animation, so it kind of looks a little a little weird if you're a fan of the old Inspector Gadget.
Yeah, I went on Amazon to look and see about ordering some of the Inspector Gadget DVD series and stuff like that. And there's just so many of them out there. It's going to be like $200 or $300 worth of DVDs.
Yeah, I mean, I used to love Inspector Gadget as a kid. I mean, that was one of my favorite cartoons. And one of the other cartoons they're bringing back is from the BBC, Danger Mouse.
Yep, and that's set for spring of 2016 right now.
That's what it's looking at. But yeah, the Inspector Gadget's coming out this month. I don't have any release dates on the others, but they're also rebooting the Magic School Bus, something called like Popples that I've never heard of, and Care Bears.
Ah, interesting. I've never been too much of a Care Bears fan. I can remember being a kid. And,
Gummy Bears is always a better show.
I like gummy bears. They taste good.
That show was pretty cool. But yeah, I mean, I used to be a big fan of Danger Mouse because it was kind of like a James Bond, but he was a mouse. And he drove around this badass car that kind of looked like the Mach 5 from Speed Racer. It was just like badass white sports car. And his sidekick was this mole.
So, yeah, I mean, I'm curious to give those a watch and... I don't know. I mean, I'll go into it with an open mind because I know they're not going to be what I remember from my childhood and everything. So that way...
Kick you right in the nostalgia.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, it's talking about keeping, you know, the kids entertained and everything else. Hell, that's going to keep the parents entertained. Kids are going to be like, what the hell is this?
Go-Go Gadget Cigar.
Whoa. Is that a thing? Can we have that? Go-Go Gadget Cutter. Torch.
There you go. I mean, we're talking about people hanging out with that could, like, you know, light cigars and cut them for us. And, yeah.
Inspector Gadget fits that bill.
Yeah, low gadget up with some cigar accessories.
He's a little bit more level-headed, too, so you don't have freaking Wolverine just wanting to off you for making some smart-ass comment.
All righty, then. I guess that'll about... You got any other news?
That about wraps us up here. You know, we'll revisit maybe some other topics and our final thoughts coming up here soon.
All righty.
Stay tuned.
All right. Any final thoughts, Brad?
Yeah, St. Paddy's Day is awesome. It gives me a great excuse to drink booze, watch good movies, laugh.
Green beer.
River Streets. I mean,
I did go to Savannah once for St. Paddy's Day, and I drank enough Guinness to drown a leprechaun. It was quite the
quite
experience.
Quite the experience, yes.
I think one of the final thoughts I have, I just finished reading the book Ready Player One. That is a badass book. It came last month's Loot Crate. If you're a fan of like the 80s and like pop culture references, I mean, this book is like right up your alley.
Yep. I've started it and, you know, I definitely am much more familiar with the game aspect of the 80s than I am some of the movie aspects. So it's right up my alley because I actually knew all the references.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And they say it's a mix between Willy Wonka and The Matrix. And I thought that was a pretty accurate description.
Yeah. It actually was a New York Times bestseller, too, wasn't it?
Yeah. I think it actually had a couple awards. Also, my other final thought is our next episode is going to be kind of our birthday episode since we're both have birthdays this month. So if you want to get us a gift, go to iTunes, rate the show, you know. Share it with your friends. Go to our Facebook page. You know, share it. Let's try to get our likes and our downloads, you know, up for our birthdays. You know, so for our birthday parents, if you do that, just, you know, share the show. Give us likes. Spread the word. Let's see, you know, how many more, you know, listeners we can get by the end of
this month.
This
gift isn't going to cost you anything, of course, unless you want to have cigars and drinks with us.
That too. You can buy cigars if you want. But yeah, let's spread the word of the show. And like I said, you can always find us on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever podcasts are found. Check out our website, CigarNerdPodcast.com. Check us out on Twitter at CigarNerdPod. Our Facebook page, we're also on the ESO Network at ESOPodcast.com. And with that, live long and prosper. And this has been a recording of the Cigar Nerd Podcast with your hosts, Smokin' Joe and Brad Jackson. Join us next time for more adventures in nerddom.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at ESONetwork.com.